listener discretion is advised. 500,000 Australians currently live with mental illness too complex for GP care, but not urgent enough to warrant hospitalisation. Yet they don't qualify for NDIS and cannot access the support they need. Sebastian Rosenberg is an associate professor in mental health policy at both the University of Canberra and the University of Sydney, and he joins us today. Sebastian, how are you?
G'day, Bethany. Well, thanks.
So 2/3 of New South Wales psychiatric workforce resigned at the start of this year, which is a massive number. What led to Australia's mental health system being on critical life support?
There's a range of factors. One thing to begin with is that Australia had a national mental health strategy, which started in 1992. And when that began, mental health share of the total health budget was about 7.3%. In 2022-23, so that's fully 30 years later, the amount of money allocated to mental health was the same, 7.3%.
Wow.
Which sort of blows my mind a little, because you think about all the things that have happened over those 30 years, not just the development of a national mental health strategy in which Australia was a world leader, but then a whole bunch of other things like Beyond Blue and Black Dog and Headspace and a whole bunch of other things which have happened around mental health. And yet in the end, mental health share of the health budget remains the same. And just to put that into further perspective, the burden of disease for which mental health and drug and alcohol is responsible is about 15%. So you get 15% burden of disease and 7% of the funding. And that gap does not explain everything, to answer your question about why things are bad, but it certainly explains something, that we are underfunded. However, I think there are some other reasons which also relate to the way our system is organised. And that was partly what I was trying to get at in the article that I wrote for The Conversation, where I was pointing out the findings of the Productivity Commission report, which showed that there were 500,000 people with severe and moderate mental illness who needed psychosocial care in particular, who weren't able to get it. So it's not just about the amount of money we receive, it's also about where it's spent.
Yeah, and in your article as well, you talked about the missing middle. What is that for our listeners?
Okay, so look, if I was going to be maybe overly simplistic, in your left hand are primary care mental health services provided largely by general practitioners and psychologists, and these are funded under Medicare, and that's in your left hand. In your right hand is acute care services or hospital-based services, and these are often inpatient services. It might be emergency department and often outpatient care clinics at hospitals, and they're in your right hand, and they're funded by the state government. What is clearly missing are secondary services, if you like, community-based mental health services, in the middle. And the reason for that is because nobody pays for them and nobody owns them. They are the missing middle of territory between the two governments, levels of government, that have responsibility for mental health care. And again, going back to 1992, I know I'm gray-bearded and getting old, but, you know, part of the reason why we had a national mental health strategy was to recognise the need to reorganise our mental health service system away from the old mental health asylums. And part of the reason for that was justified as being the development and establishment of a vibrant, healthy, well-resourced community mental health sector to keep people well in the community. And frankly, we've never had that in Australia. And that's why you've got this thing, which is called the missing middle. But look, you know, even then, I think that is an inadequate description because, of course, just to give you an example, again, people who have schizophrenia may well go to hospital from time to time to receive care. Now, what do we do for those people when they are well? As they get better, they transition from the hospital to the community sector, and they may well need some support, a mixture of clinical care and psychosocial care. They also enter into the missing middle. Now, it's not as if these people are not known to us. We know people who need mental health care, some people who need mental health care well. But what happens is that the care that they need is missing. And that, as I say, is because of this gap between federal and state responsibilities.
Yeah. And until we're able to sort of bridge that gap, and until the state and federal governments are able to work together to reform this system, where does evidence indicate that affected people should seek care? What services would you be recommending to clients or to individuals who may not need that hospital but also need some sort of support?
That's a great question. And I'm afraid there isn't an easy answer. There isn't a quick, I can recommend this or that. One of the things I think I would do if I was a person with mental illness that needed assistance is I would try to seek out the views of peers of other people who had already sought help in the system. So I know, for example, that this is a function that a group called BATIA often provide for young people, where they are able to provide some advice about where to go for care that is respectful and responsive. But I think that kind of peer-reviewed advice is really important because of the patchy nature of our mental health care system. So a good service may exist, but it's unlikely to exist in multiple locations. It's likely to exist just here. And if I don't live near there, then I won't be able to get access to that service. And of course, services also often have fairly arbitrary rules about who qualifies based on where a person lives or what they earn or what have you. So asking for advice from consumer peer-run bodies near where you live is probably a good place to start. And if you're a family person or a family member or a carer, there are also care organisations that can provide you with advice about what might be of assistance to your loved one closer to where you live. Failing that, I think that some GPs are well placed to understand what is going on in local areas and to have good local connections. Again, that varies often from GP to GP. And there are also, of course, some psychologists who, again, are also well placed. Sometimes allied health workers, social workers in particular. But again, the picture is patchy. So I would start with peers.
Yeah, well, thank you so much, Sebastian, for joining us today.
Thanks very much for your time, Bethany.
Associate Professor Sebastian Rosenberg, who teaches at the University of Sydney and the University of Canberra in mental health policy, on the line there to chat about how 500,000 Australians aren't getting the NDIS psychosocial support they need for mental health. If this conversation has raised any concerns for you or someone you know, call a 24/7 counsellor on Beyond Blue at 1300 224 636 or Lifeline at 13 11 14.